Open with me to Genesis chapter 47. As we read these verses, chapter 46 going into chapter 47, we see, don't we, Jacob, his family, everything that they own, going up to the land of Egypt. And so this one family, this group of people who had been chosen by God, this particular nation, who had been chosen to be a special people to God. They now found themselves in a different country, didn't they? They were now in a different land, and they were forced to ask themselves the question, how is this going to change us? How is living in Egypt going to affect us? What is our relationship going to be like with these people? How are we, the Israelites, how are we going to relate to these Egyptians? If we, this evening, are Christians, if we are part of God's chosen people, if we have given our lives to Him and are following Him, then we should be asking ourselves this same question. What is our relationship going to be with the world around us? How is living here in Newport or living in Cardiff or wherever God has put you, how is that going to affect the way that you live? How are we going to relate with the people in our work? How are we going to deal with our friends and our families? How are our relationships with those people, the world around us, every single person we meet, how is that going to affect us and change us? And so as we look here in Genesis 48, I believe we see a suggestion of what are the principles that we should follow in our relationship with the world around us. The first principle is this, and we see it throughout Scripture, don't we? That we, as God's people, are meant to be in the world, but not of the world. This is our first point. We are in the world, but not of the world. As we've said, because of this famine, the people of Israel, they were forced to leave Canaan. They were forced to leave this land that God had promised to give them and go to another place. But what was life going to look like? What was their day-to-day life going to look like in this new place? Were they just going to forget their roots? Were they going to forget who they were? Were they going to settle down and say, well, here we are now. We're in Egypt. This is our new home. Were they going to start talking like Egyptians? Were they going to start living like Egyptians, dressing in the same way as the Egyptians dressed? Were they going to start thinking, have that same mindset as the Egyptian people? Were they going to become so immersed, such a part of that particular culture, that they'd be inseparable? You couldn't tell the difference between an Israelite and an Egyptian. Were they going to do their best just to fit in, to blend in, not to be different? Were they going to start worshipping the gods of Egypt? Forget about their God. Forget about the one true God who had revealed himself to them. Were they just going to try and fit in? It's always a temptation, isn't it? If you're a minority, there is always that temptation to fit in, to follow the crowd, to be influenced by mainstream culture. We see it, don't we? I mean, maybe you've seen it on the news, showing scenes of children in third world countries, the back of beyond, but somehow they have managed to get hold of a television and they've watched American TV and they speak with an American accent. They speak English with an American accent. They come out with these slang phrases which are so obviously influenced by a culture which is far, far from them. And yet that is the mainstream culture, and they imbibe it, they drink it in, they soak it up. There is always that danger, that fear when we are a minority surrounded by a powerful, influential culture. And it's clear, isn't it, as we read this story, that Joseph knew that danger. And he wanted to do everything he could to make sure that that didn't happen. He wanted to make sure that his family remained distinct, different. He wanted to limit how much of an influence Egypt, life in Egypt, was going to have on his family. How does he do it? Well, ironically, it's by telling them just to tell the truth. He tells them to just be yourselves. These brothers, this family who had been so dishonest in the past, who'd found it so hard to tell the truth in the past, he tells them just don't lie. When Pharaoh asks you who you are and what you do, say the truth. You see, it's almost certain, isn't it? I mean, think about it. Joseph could have gotten them work anywhere. He was a pretty powerful guy, a pretty influential guy himself. If Joseph had wanted to, he could have pulled a few strings, spoken to the right people, gotten them in through the back door to any sorts of good, respectable, powerful, financially viable jobs. He could have gotten them in anywhere. He could have gotten them work, yes, in the cornfields. He could have gotten them work probably in Pharaoh's palace. But he doesn't do that, does he? Joseph knows the best thing for this people is to keep them separate, keep that degree of separation. And so he tells them, you have to say the truth. When Pharaoh asks you, what do? Tell him that you are shepherds. You are people who keep livestock. This is what you know best. This is what you've always done. This is what your forefathers have always done. This is your skill, looking after animals. Why? Why did Joseph do that? Well, it meant two things, didn't it? By telling the truth, by saying we are shepherds, it meant two things. First of all, it meant that they would have to be separate from the majority of Egyptians. Purely practically speaking, if they were going to feed their animals, if they were going to find enough grass and pasture for the animals to graze, then they would have to be separate. They would have to be away from the rest of the land where the Egyptians were still trying to grow their crops. And that was the work for most Egyptians. They were a culture that grew crops, and so the Israelites would have to be separate from what most of the people were doing. The obvious place that they would be sent was this land of Goshen. Completely physically, they would be separate. They'd be away from the hubbub of Egypt. They'd be away from the cultural center. They'd be away from the places of worship. They'd be away to keep on living as they had been living, feeling less of that pressure to compromise their beliefs. But there was another reason why Joseph says, tell him that you are shepherds. At the time, this particular career would have involved social separation. Not just physical separation, social separation, being looked down upon. We heard earlier, didn't we, in Genesis 46, verse 34, every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians. This actual work of looking after animals was an abomination to the Egyptians. They looked down upon that job. This was the lowest of the low. If you could think of the worst job ever for an Egyptian, this was it. This was the job that people laughed at, that people made fun of, that nobody wanted to do. But Joseph knew that this was the best way. The best way for his family to keep their identity, to remember who they are. And so they were willing to accept that, weren't they? They listened to him. They were willing to have people laugh at them. They were willing to be scorned and made fun of. They were willing not to be the most popular people, not to be part of the in crowds. They were willing to be looked down on. I just want us to think for a minute. Think about this idea of being in the world. They were in Egypt, weren't they? They were there amongst the people, and yet they were separate somehow. They were not of the world. They weren't just the same as everybody else. Isn't that exactly the way that Jesus lived? As we look at his life, isn't that exactly what we see? He was in the world. He was part of this world, and yet he was not of the world. For years he worked as a carpenter, lived among people, sat with them, ate with them, spoke to them, helped them, discussed with them, taught them, healed them, helped them. We read of the way that he gave advice to people, the way that he encouraged people. We know that he was part of a community. People knew who this was. They knew who he was. He wasn't just some stranger. They knew him. And yet, they knew he was different. They knew he was not the same as everybody else. Even though he spent so much time with sinners, eating with them, eating with the dregs of society, everybody knew that actually he was not just a good guy. Nobody could find any sin in him. He was different. Even though he would spend these hours debating and discussing with the religious elite, the hypocrites, everybody knew that he practiced what he taught. He didn't just say it, he did it. He was different. There were times when he chose to separate himself from the world. We read, don't we, of those times when he would draw himself away. He wouldn't just follow the crowd, he'd pull away from the crowd. He'd go and find a quiet place, a mountaintop, a desert, a place away from people so that he could be alone with God, so that he could seek God in prayer. He was different. People looked at him and they could tell he is not like us. He is not like any other teacher that we have heard. He is special. Jesus was in the world, but he was not of the world. And just like these Israelites, Jesus was willing for people to look down on him. He was willing to be considered an abomination. Jesus was willing to be scorned and laughed at. Jesus was willing to have people shout and curse him, spit on him, hit him, whip him, beat him, blindfold him, torture him, kill him. He was willing to have people look at him hanging on a cross, dying for their sins, and consider him an abomination. Consider him to have been cursed by God. As they looked at him dying on that tree, they saw one who had been cursed by God. Jesus was willing to take our curse. He was willing to become an abomination in the eyes of God even, as he took our sin upon him. He was in the world, but he was not of this world. He didn't chase after those things that the world prizes. He didn't seek his own glory. He didn't look for other people to serve him, but no, he came to serve. What about us this evening? Obviously, we are living in a certain place, in a certain time, among a certain people. We, each of us, have neighbors. We have jobs, friends, people we spend time with. We have a lot in common with these people. We watch the same programs as them. We read the same books as them. But are we the same as them? Are we letting ourselves become so influenced by this world, by these people that we live among, that if people look at us, they can't see any difference? Do we have a different mindset? Do we remember who we are? Do we keep a distance from certain parts of this culture? Do we keep away from just following the crowd, trying to blend in? We don't want to be noticed. We don't want to be different. We don't want people to think we're weird, think we're odd, laugh at us. That's my challenge for us this evening. Do people look at us and know that we are different? They may not know what the difference is. They may not be able to put their finger on it, put it into words. Do people look at you and I and say, there's something different about him? He's not the same. She's not the same. They're not like I am. They don't live for the same things. The things that would floor me don't have any real effect on them. The things that I spend all my time worrying about, they're free from worrying about those things. Do people see that we're different? Do people sense that, yes, we're in this world. Yes, we spend time with people and don't keep ourselves away from them. And yet, we're different. Are we willing to have people look down on us? Are we willing, as we faithfully try and serve God and live lives that are pleasing to him, as we try and share with other people this wonderful gospel that we have, are we willing to have people look down on us? Willing to have them laugh at us and scorn us? Are we willing to have them tell lies about us? Consider us to be an abomination? Are you willing to suffer in that same way that Jesus suffered as we serve him? No servant is greater than his master. Are we willing to live those kinds of lives? Are we willing to have people say hurtful things about us because they know that we're different, that we're not the same? Our second point. These Israelites were meant to be a blessing to the world. Despite this separation, despite the fact that they were meant to be different, they were in Egypt. They were among those people. And so their presence, the fact that they were there, was meant to have a positive effect. They were meant to be influencing other people, not the other way around. They weren't the ones who were supposed to be changing. They were meant to be having an effect on other people. They were meant to be a blessing to the world around them. How? In what ways? Why do I say this? Well, in one sense, we've already seen, haven't we, how the Egyptians were blessed by Israel. The fact that Joseph was there in the first place was a blessing to them. If God had not organized events in such a way that Joseph, the favorite son of Jacob, would end up in Egypt, it's not just the Israelites who would have died, is it? But all of Egypt, they would have died in this famine. Countless people would have suffered. God wasn't just blessing his own people. God was using his people to bless others. The Egyptians were blessed by the fact that Joseph had organized things in such a way as they were saved. More than that, Egypt is now going to be blessed by Jacob's other sons. Pharaoh says, doesn't he, if there are any able men among Joseph's brothers, that they are to be given prominent positions. They are meant to look after Pharaoh's livestock. So, speaking practically, Egypt now is going to benefit from the skills and the abilities of these men as shepherds. And I'm sure that in these positions of comparative influence and authority, they would be able to have a positive effect on people. And even here, as Jacob, the head of this small family, as he comes into the presence of who is probably the most powerful man in the world at this time, what does Jacob do? He blesses him, doesn't he? Twice we see it in verse 7. Then Joseph brought in Jacob his father and stood him before Pharaoh. What happens? Jacob blessed Pharaoh. Then verse 10. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from the presence of Pharaoh. In that particular scene, who would you have expected to bless who? Who should have been giving a blessing to who? Who is the powerful man, the man with all the authority, all the material wealth? Who is the man who should have been blessing whom? And yet what do we see? Jacob blessed Pharaoh. Jacob wished him well. Jacob wanted the best for this man. He didn't just come in and say, well, you're a pagan. You're a sinner. You don't worship the God that I know. He doesn't look down on him because of his spiritual ignorance. No. No, he blesses him. We don't know exactly what words he used. He may have just wished peace to Pharaoh. Peace be upon you. May your land be peaceful and your life be peaceful. Maybe the blessing was similar to the blessing that Jacob had from his father, a blessing that wished prosperity. May you grow in your wealth and in your assets. May your life be abundant and full and prosperous and good. Maybe the blessing was similar to the blessing that Jacob later gives to Joseph's sons. A blessing praying that God would be with them. We don't know. We don't know. All we can know is this, that Jacob blessed Pharaoh. Whatever was the content of that blessing, he wished him well. He wanted to see Pharaoh succeed. He wanted the best for Pharaoh. He didn't curse him. He didn't say, may you fall down dead because you do not worship God. No, he blessed him. If we look at the life of Jesus, don't we see, again, this same principle? Jesus came to this world to bless. Jesus came to be the blessing to this world. His entire life, every moment, was aimed at seeking the best for other people. He didn't come into this world to be blessed by other people. No, he came to bless them. He loved people. He loved the people that came to him. He feeds them. When he sees them hungry and in need, he fulfills their need. He blesses them by showing them the truth, by telling them who he is, who the Father is. He blesses people by warning them, by telling them that they need to repent. He blessed people by pointing them to God. You see, in everything he said and did, Jesus blessed those around him. He wanted the best for people. He wanted the best for them. He wanted to see their lives being changed, to see an impact, to see a difference. Jesus blessed the world by giving himself for the sins of the world. What about us? What about us this evening? As Jesus' disciples, we are meant to be a blessing to the world around us. The Bible describes it as being salt and light in the world. In the same way that salt purifies and protects from rot, we are meant to have that positive effect. We are meant to have an influence on the people around us. If we are part of a conversation, the fact that we are there is meant to be limiting how sinful that conversation becomes. The fact that we are in a room should be influencing the topics that people talk about, or the program that they're watching at that time, the jokes that they're telling. We are meant to be like salt. We're meant to be preventing people from sinning, pointing them to God. Like light shining in the darkness. What a blessing that is. When you cannot see the way, when you are lost and you have no light, what a blessing it is when the light shines forth. We are meant to be that light. We are meant to be sharing the truth with people, telling them the truth about who they are, about their sin, about their rebellion from God, pointing them, shining them towards the Lord Jesus Christ, pointing them to the one who will fulfill their deepest need. How can we be salt and light this evening? Have you asked yourself that question? How can this church make a difference? How can you, as a group of God's people, make an impact, make a difference to the society around you? What are those things that you can do? What are those places, those works that you can be involved in? Where can you put yourself as an individual so that you can have a positive impact? So that you can have an input? It's possible. You may think it's not possible for you and I to make a difference, but we can. We see in the past countless examples of Christian people who, because of what they believe, because they know the truth and want to see a difference, they've changed things. They've changed things. They've made huge differences, even today. Today, there are people, Christians, in the Houses of Parliament, and they are making differences, day by day. Differences to the laws that are being passed. Think about those sportsmen, sports people, perhaps I should say, who have made a stand for Jesus in their profession, who have said, no, I will not do this. No, I will not compete on a Sunday. Standing, showing people, influencing, just by witnessing to Jesus. Do we bless people? Are we a blessing to the people around us? Do you look at your neighbour, and do you want the best for that person? Do you look, opposite end of the spectrum, do you look at David Cameron, our Pharaoh of our day? Do you look at him and say, bless you. I want the best for you. I want you to be successful. I want you to be blessed in the biggest way, the most important way. I want you to be saved. Do we bless the people around us? Do we have an effect on the way that they live their lives? Are they aware that we bless them? Are they aware that we have this desire to see the best for them, to serve them, to help them, to love them? Are we a blessing to the world this evening? Finally, we are meant to be strangers in the world. Strangers in the world. The word that comes up here several times is sojourning. We are meant to be sojourners. We are meant to be pilgrims, travelers, passing through. Listen to the description that Jacob gives of his life. He says, the days of the years of my sojourning are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life. And they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning. It's a bleak description, isn't it? It's a bleak way to talk about your life. Think about what he's saying here. We get this sense, don't we, that Jacob here is filled with regret. He is filled with regret, not just for those things that he has done. He says that he has done evil things. His life has been filled with terrible things. And yet you also get the sense he regrets all those things that he didn't do. All those things that he should have done, but didn't do. All of these days of the years of his life that he's wasted. Opportunities to do good that he missed. See, days, they soon add up, don't they? Jacob here, even though he's lived a long life, very long by our standards, he just saw it as days, didn't he? A matter of days. They didn't compare even to the days of his fathers, let alone to those before them. Days. How many days do you and I waste? We think, it's just a day. It's just a day. I'll have a day off now. A day off from trying to be different. A day off from trying to be a blessing to the people around me. Days turn into weeks, turn into months, turn into 130 years here. The days of the years of my life has flown by. It's gone. Before he's turned round, he's at the end of his life and he just thinks of it as being days. All those days. There's something in Jacob here, isn't there? You sense it in his words that there's something not quite right. The days of the years of my sojourning are 130 years. That's years, isn't it? It's a long time. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life. And they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning. Sojourning. Traveling. Even after all of these years, all these days on earth, he still sees himself as a sojourner. Like his parents before him. He's a sojourner. He's a traveler. He's a pilgrim. He's just passing through. And all he can think of are those things that he should have done differently. as he gets closer and closer to his death, he feels more and more that there is something wrong here. That there is something unnatural about death. That there is something wrong about this world. This is not the world that we were created to live in. This is not the life that he was created to live. There's something wrong. He feels it. As he looks back over his life, he knows that there is something wrong in this situation. Nobody knew that better than the Lord Jesus Christ. As God, he knew in a far greater way than we ever can what his purpose was for this creation. He knew what his intention was for us. He knew how far we have fallen. He knew how deeply sin had influenced this world. He felt more deeply than we ever can the consequences of sin in this world. And yet, he chose to come. Chose to leave the glory that he had enjoyed for eternity. Came to this fallen world. And lived among us. Sojourned among us. During his ministry, he didn't have a fixed home. He was a pilgrim. He was a sojourner. Every day of his life, he was reminded, looking around him, of the pain and the suffering that is in this world. Of the evil that is in this world. All around him, he could see the negative effects of sin. He knew that there was something wrong with this world. And so we read that even Jesus lived his life with his eyes focused on the future, didn't he? Jesus lived his life with his eyes fixed on the glory that was awaiting him. In the book of Hebrews, we read these words, "For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross. For the joy that was waiting for him, he endured the cross. He focused his eyes on the glory that was waiting for him, when he would return to his Father in heaven and enjoy an eternity there, in the company of those people that he had brought with his own life." He was willing to keep going in this terrible fallen world because he knew there was something more, something greater to come. What about us? Are we this evening too attached to this world? Are you anchored to this world, this life? Do we allow our lives just to revolve around those things that are ultimately meaningless? In the end, they're just going to perish. They're just going to disappear. Are we completely obsessed with the here and now? Because if this life is all there is, if this life is it, end of the story, and we don't accomplish anything, what's the point? We can be just like Jacob. It's a terrible thought, isn't it? That our lives is just like grass. Just like grass that withers. In the blink of an eye. Like flowers whose glory fades. We can be like Jacob, can't we? Looking back with regret. Thinking back over our lives and knowing all those terrible things that we've done. Wishing that we'd use our time better. We all have these regrets. We all regret things, don't we? And if this life is all there is, then what hope is there? If this life is it, then all of us will be like Jacob, saying, "Phew. And evil have been the days of my sojourning." But We don't have to think in that way. Because we can know in our hearts, we can realize that there is something wrong with this world. We can accept the fact that actually this isn't our real home. We don't really belong here. We are just a sojourner. We are just a pilgrim traveling through, passing through on our way to our real home. We don't need to look back over our lives regretting those things that we have done, because we don't need to be tied to this life. We can start living today in the light of the future, in the light of eternity. We can let this knowledge know today that this is not your home. This is not your home. This is not the world that you were created to live in. This is not the life that you were made to live. That world has fallen into sin. God has a better world for you and I. We can look forward knowing, as we've seen in Philippians, that our citizenship, where we really belong, the place that we can really call home, is heaven, is with God. We don't need to be tied to this world. We don't need to be attached to this world, because we can know where we will spend eternity. Are you longing this evening? Is there that part of you that longs to be with God in glory? Is there that part of you that knows this life is not it? It's not the end of the story. It doesn't matter how many regrets I have, there is a day coming when it'll all be washed away. It'll all be burned up. There is a home waiting for us, a place where we can settle for good, no longer passing through, a place where we can settle forever. Are we living knowing what awaits us? Are we storing up treasures for ourselves in heaven? Are we investing in those things which are going to last for eternity? Are we investing in people? Are we trying to reach them? Trying to tell them this news that they have to hear? Are we investing in our own spiritual life, our walk with God? Are we living our lives for the glory of God? Do you know this evening that you are just a stranger in this world? This is not your home. Your real home is with God forever. And are you living in the light of that knowledge? For his glory. Amen.